Live from Burbank, California, where everybody's mommy's little whore. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, his kidnapping was a hoax. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, people. Good evening. Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Thank you for hanging out. Jim, what are you doing on the floor on your hands and knees? What are you doing on
the fourth wall again?
Why are you on the floor? Did you drop something? What the hell's going on?
Turning up my can volume.
Oh, you strung out on the crack? You looking for a rock? What's happening?
No, I just told you.
Are you in a rock panic? Are you in a crack panic? What's going on, Jim?
Yes, I'm panicking. I am panicking for crack, Mark. Does that make you feel better?
God. It sure makes me feel better. I'm a little wound up. I know it's Friday.
A little wound up. How do you know the difference between, you know, when you are and aren't wound up?
I have a certain amount of peace of mind when I'm refilling my hummingbird feeder at home.
Really?
Wondering whether or not the birds will come back around and I can sit and peacefully watch my cat try to kill them. That's where I know that I'm not wound up.
That's relaxing. I'm watching one animal kill another.
It's nothing. It's life, Jim. And you of all people should be practical and pragmatic in recognizing that is the way of the world. Our buddy Andy here is running the board out there for us. Speaking of ways of the world, he was all excited. Like, I walk in, he's like, dude, you got to read that wasp story. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, it's on the computer. You got to go in and read the wasp story. And this is, I mean, I'm sure, like, I know I'm going to read this story. You know what's amazing about our listeners is the range of information they will claim to know on the blog.
Hell yeah.
Like, I know I'm going to read this story about the Ampelex compressor wasp. And no matter what I say about it from the story I have sitting in front of me, somebody on the blog will be like, you know, it's really interesting about the Ampelex compressor wasp is they name their young. You know, they're going to find some weird tidbit of information that I didn't have. But this Ampelex compressor wasp has evolved this weird trait. It's insidious. What it does is it'll tackle a roach, insert a stinger into the brain of the roach, and then it takes over the roach's nervous system. Then what it'll do, it'll use the roach's antenna to steer the roach into its lair, the wasp's lair. Then it will lay eggs, I guess it will lay eggs in the wasp. Let me make sure I'm saying it right. Okay. It's going to lay the eggs inside the wasp. And all this is going on inside this poor roach. It was just minding its own business going, hey, I wonder if I'm going to be, you know, if I'm going to make to that casting call for the commercial, for the hotels. And then the eggs hatch and they eat the roach. And that's how this is part of their evolutionary process, this wasp. And as I said, Jim,
yes.
Not unlike any other relationship, is it?
Yeah, I was going to say, next step, alimony.
Yeah.
You put the thing in the brain, steer it to a house. Next step, alimony.
That's right.
Yeah.
Why alimony, though? There's no divorce. The kids eat this guy from the inside, and that's the end of him. So then she gets the money.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mr. Captain Joe Kill.
What did we just talk? When did this show become, this? What are we going to sit and talk bad about women? By the way, on the show tonight, Ian Gillan from Deep Purple, the original singer of Deep Purple, the guy.
I know.
I'm lazy, just stay in bed. Or Space, come on. Come on. Come on. Let's go space trucking. Come on, Jim. It's not all Beatles, Jim.
I just know the dun, it's dun, dun.
I want you to play it on your guitar when he comes. Also, Chris Hardwick.
I'm not going to do that.
The comedian Chris Hardwick, also from Hard and Firm. That's not a porn film. It's not anything like that. It's a musical act. They do a shtick. They do a sort of postmodern burlesque, if you will. Chris Hardwick's going to come out here and talk to us about bowling. I don't care what he says. You're going to talk to us about bowling. He is the do you talk about it? He's out there on a computer now. He is the legacy of professional bowler. I don't know if he wants to talk about it. I might have just brought up something horrible. He's walking out of the room. His dad was a professional bowler, and I'm going to get him talking about it. He's one of those guys where, you know, someone invite you to a bowling party. You're like, yeah, all right, we'll go bowling. Everyone goes to the bowling party, and he comes with his own ball, and it's all polished up.
Yeah.
And he's got the shoes, and he knows how to put his hand over the little vent thing right, and, you know, everything is all solid. And then he's just, like, closing his eyes, whips the ball around, and literally the ball kind of does tricks. He's got a spin on it that can make it zigzag and get a strike. And it's like it's nothing because he was brought up with it. I'm sure there's some torture stories behind that. There's got to be. Like, you will learn how to bowl or we're not going home. I got it. I'm looking forward
to
that.
Sure, his ball is fixed. That's why he brings his own. It's got a gyroscope thing.
How can you fix a bowling ball?
It's got a thing in the middle that makes it spin.
But you still got to know how to throw the damn thing. Do you know how to bowl?
I can bowl very well for the first, 20 minutes, and then it goes down the crapper.
Now, I'm wondering if I should start calling my wife Ampulex Compressa. That's the my wife's not like that.
Not at all. I've seen you two together. It's nothing like that.
It's nothing like that. No, it's just me begging, pleading, please don't stop liking me because I'm an irritating, neurotic ass. Could you please not stop liking me, please? We talked about some stuff yesterday. And we're going to talk about some issues. You know, I got a few issues on board. Apparently, everybody in the military doesn't like Donald Rumsfeld. That's what I'm saying. Why do I get the feeling that Ian Gillen just called and he's not coming? Is that what's going on out there? Really? Well, don't look at me with a sad face. Somebody get on a mic on the air right now and tell me what's going on out there in that booth. Can you do that, Andy? Can you say, Bill Kohler, Sleepy Bill Kohler, I want to know what the talk is out there in the booth. I'm bringing you into the situation. What's up? 15 minutes late on Ian Gillen. See, now, being that we're taped, no one's going to know that, but we know that now, so you know what we're going through. So this is getting very meta. Do you dig what I'm saying, man? We're giving you the bird's eye view of the thing that's going on that you're not going to know about because it's going to be on later and will have already happened, but this is just something we're going to have to deal with in real time. Wow, this is confusing, dude. I'm in an M.C. Escher painting.
Can I just say something about the bloggers knowing everything? Gypsy yesterday put something on about the aspartame lady that was kind of raised my doubts about...
You know what? I'm not going to take this crap from you or any of the bloggers. You know,
what?
I read that stuff too.
You did?
I go to the blog occasionally. You know, what's amazing about liberals and progressives is how quickly we eat our own.
I don't think this is it. You know, we're just questioning. You got to be questioning
fine, be questioning me. Let me just ask you one thing. Bottom line,
yes.
Is aspartame bad for you?
I would think probably more so than that. No.
Oh, you're crazy. Of course it's bad for you.
But of course it's bad for you.
So what if she maybe latches on to studies that aren't exactly leading to what she's saying? The bottom line is I've looked at the research myself, and there is a pretty good indication, if not 100% indication, that this stuff is a neurotoxin. It's bad for at least some people in a devastating way who aren't necessarily allergic to it. And all of a sudden, what, we're going to become Coca-Cola sympathizers? Screw them. Why can't we just say, look, Betty Martini, even if she overdoes it, is standing for something reasonable?
You, more than anyone else, should know the value of critical self-inquiry.
Okay. Keep going. What do you got?
I'm just saying that it's always good to question your sources and make sure they're correct
before you go full
tilt on something.
Well, I'm not going full tilt.
Yeah, you're going full tilt on it. Yesterday you were full tilt. Play that clip,
aspartame?
You don't have the clip? Okay.
On aspartame? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're a pre-tape show. We can't organize that enough to get the in order to get the clip, Jim, we've got to know we're going to talk about this crap.
I got the clip right here. Here you are. Here's it.
I decided, because after a movie I saw, that, and it's reasonable. I mean, most reasonable people realize, hey, not only do I not need regular soda, but I don't need diet soda. Soda's just bad in general, and I understand it.
I
am very committed, I have been a good part of my life, to certain corporations. You know why? Because I grew to believe in their products. I love Coke. Coke, I love it. I love Coca-Cola. It's all over my book and my one-man show, my need for Coca-Cola. So when I started, here's what started happening to me. My memory started going crappy, okay, and I wasn't smoking no pot, and I know that I'm getting old, and maybe that's just by virtue of the fact that I'm pre-Parkinson's. I don't know what the hell I am. And then I started reading some stuff about aspartame, and I said, well, this is worthy of investigation. Then a woman sends me this movie, and it's a movie not unlike a Robert Greenwald film, something that's made on a shoestring budget, on research that is out there. There's definitely a lot of research, tons of it, that would indicate that aspartame's not bad for you. I know some of the people on the blog were like, everything's a chemical. Yeah, sure, everything's a chemical. Some chemicals happen naturally. But scientists have proven that this stuff turns into something bad in your system. If you want to do that, I'm sure you'll adapt to it. It might not hurt you. It might not have any effect on your life at all. But I don't think that means that the message shouldn't be out there. Maybe she is a bit over the top. Maybe she is pushing it. She's a marginal character. But I still thought it was very interesting, and I think it's a compelling argument to turn your back on a corporate product that we don't really necessarily need. Coca-Cola is not a great company. They're one of the bad companies.
No, it's a horrible company. They're cutting down rainforests in Brazil.
All right, so now that we can bring it to an environmental issue that you have apparently sufficient proof enough to make your argument, we can say that Coca-Cola is crappy?
Definite proof on that.
All right.
They own Minute Maid.
So how is it that you're not spinning it in some... Okay, so that information is solid. Okay,
we've got
definite proof of that. But, you know, two phone book-sized bundles of research about aspartame,
Have you seen these phone books?
Yeah, they're big, thick things.
You haven't seen them?
I've seen pictures of them. It means there's a lot of type...
Pictures? You've seen pictures?
Yeah, there's a lot of words in there.
You know,
A lot of words with chemical compounds and then the word bad around.
I saw a picture of a jackalope on the web, too.
Jackalopes are real? What the hell you got to crap on that for?
Oh, man.
I grew up in the Southwest. We used to, you know those trouts that you got to load on the truck? We had to get those.
Can we play that clip?
20-foot trouts, jackalopes. I know what you're saying, and I understand their criticism. And I understand that there's no reason not to be critical of the integrity of the information that Betty Martini is purveying. But I will say this. In the same way that, you know, there's a lot of things political that we don't know about. There's a lot of things that go on that we don't know about, both on the right and the left, that the message, the bottom line message is clear, and I think it's reasonable, that aspartame is bad, and there's a real good chance Splenda is bad. How can something that good not be bad?
I agree with you on that. There's a big chance they're both bad for you.
You're just saying Betty Martini might be a fraud.
I'm just questioning whether or not it actually spirals into all of those things she described.
Yeah. This show is hilarious. It's just hilarious.
Can we put the funny sound effect in after what I just said?
Yeah. We're going to come back. We're going to do the short order news. I want to address some email about South Park. And then we'll talk about, as you know, if you listen to the network all day, some generals are, taking Rumsfeld to task. And he should have been out a long time ago. We'll try to get to that. It's Friday.
Now he's building a gate. Mark Maron.
I am. I got a guy named Peter building a medieval Spanish gate in front of my house. Not in front of the house, in the archway of the house. You know the archway there?
Medieval Spanish?
We looked at gates online. We found a guy that makes handmade gates. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I don't live in a castle. I live in a two-bedroom house with a turret.
Is this going to be like the ending shot of Citizen Kane where they pull out and see your gate and the big black smoke coming from the...
It'd be a short, long shot. It wouldn't have the same depth as that... you're talking about the last shot of Citizen Kane when we end up on the no trespassing sign?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, that would take very... That took like, 4 minutes in that film. It would probably only take about 40 seconds to go up and down. Because there's no levels. I'm not on a hill, really. I don't want to talk about my house. Do we got to talk about my house? Now we're painting the house, too. We've got people in there painting it. And it's not, it just needs to be done.
Paint it.
Huh?
What color?
What do I know? All I know is
Your wife picked the colors, didn't she?
Yeah, but I don't want people to get the wrong idea about my wife. She's not one of these people that does that thing. She's not like a housewife person. She's a busy writer.
Pink.
And she's a comedian.
Pink.
But then all of a sudden, you don't know when it's going to happen, but all of a sudden there are people in your house removing cabinets. And she says, I didn't tell you that we're not going to be able to sit down anywhere for a week. And I'm leaving town with my mother for 2 days, and, they're painting that. I had no idea. And now down my I slept in toxins last night. Toxins, Jim, in my room. Hey, look, folks, a lot happened in the world today, and we have and we here at the Mark Maron Show don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here now is today's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. Major General John Batista became the 6th retired general this month to call for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Interesting note, 6 is exactly the number of soldiers Rumsfeld originally wanted to send to Iraq. U.S. disaster relief officials say many houses that flooded in Hurricane Katrina will have to be raised at least 3 feet to be eligible for flood insurance and rebuilding assistance. Raising the houses 3 feet seems almost insurmountable when one considers there aren't even enough black people left in New Orleans to raise the roof. A town in Germany has postponed its tribute to 2 neo-Nazi aircraft engineers after protests by Jewish groups and local leaders who say the 2 men exploited thousands of forced laborers in their plants. When asked for comment, the mayor of the town said, well, it looks like we'll just have to switch to Zyklon B. I mean Plan B. Plan B. That's the short order news for today, for now. Let's address some other listener issues, if we could. And look, I understand. I'm very happy that the people that listen to our show are thorough and seek to criticize people who speak as experts or speak, on behalf of a health concern because they may be exaggerated. I think that is reasonable to take someone to task for those reasons. But I do think that a lot of times you got to let some things go. I mean, sure, it might be overreacting, but on another level, it might be propagandizing for the good. Is that possible? Do we all have to be rational? Or do we have to admit sometimes you have to hit something over the head a lot in order to get people to wake up to it?
Well, sure.
Okay. Okay, well, look, here's an email. Now, this is something that's sort of close to us. Hello, Mr. Marin.
It's hilarious already.
I know. I heard your favorable comments toward the TV show South Park on last night's show. I can understand why you would find the show funny, but I wonder how you feel about the creators, Parker and Stone's, hatred of liberals. In interviews, Parker has stated that, quote, I hate conservatives, but I really bleepin' hate liberals, end quote. Parker's a registered libertarian. While there should not be any sacred cows in comedy, nevertheless, South Park often skewers easy targets. Wealthy, well-meaning celebrity activists don't represent the greatest threat in the world. Blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, they give a free pass to President Bush and his corrupt cronies. I don't know if that's really true. I saw Bush just the other night pooping on things. And getting pooped on. One hardly ever sees caricatures of right-wing celebrities who blather their political claptrap, like Bruce Willis, Ron Silver, and Charlton Heston on their show, too. They are poor satirists, in my opinion. They set up straw men to knock down whenever they try this form of humor. And then he talks about the Sean Penn puppet. Take the Sean Penn puppet from World Police. America. What was that called? Team America. True satirist might point out that it's odd for Penn to preach a pacifist point of view since he's been accused of beating his former wife Madonna and took swings at the paparazzi. Instead, Parker and Stone portray Penn as a stupid for protesting American attacks on foreign countries and a collaborator to America's enemies. Look, and then he says, well, one can almost see Parker and Stone foaming at the mouth when they do these kind of scenes. Personally, I tend to agree. There's nothing more irritating than liberals, some liberals, and conservatives as well. And the reason that Trey Parker and Matt Stone, I can't speak for them, libertarianism, you know, I've met some libertarians that I think are fine. I've actually met some conservatives that I have little problem with as people outside of their political views. But I think their real problem is, in recent times, nothing has been more dangerous to the First Amendment rights of satirists than political correctness. And that's the truth. And I think that, if anything, that's what they're finding irritating. And the bottom line is, Team America, World Police, I thought skewered both the right and the left. And I just think you're wrong. I think that they are in a free zone, and I don't mind it too much. I think that their annoyance with liberals is justified on some level. We'll be back in a moment, perhaps. Yes, we will.
Now, he threw up on my couch. Mark Maron.
I never did. I never did throw up on your couch. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe I was at the same party. But there are people that can say that about me. I don't know. No, I don't throw. I was always pretty good about puking.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was my cat that threw up on the couch.
Your cat threw up. You're lucky.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on in my house right now because everything's a chaotic mess because we're building things and painting. I think the cats are going nuts and they're peeing on things. I cannot deal with it anymore. Walking around going, where's the pee? Where's the pee? Where's Ian Gillan? Are you practicing?
Yeah, man. You know, because I want to impress him because I know these chords. And I'd really like to just kind of jam with him for
sure,
a few minutes.
Sure. And there's nothing more impressive to a guy that actually recorded the song. One of the most known riffs in the history of rock and roll. To be brought into it with a guy sitting there playing it. Now, did you know? Hit it again. Let's hear it. Now, do you know any? See, this is a weird thing. When you were growing up, when you started playing guitar, I was just talking to Hardwick about this. Hardwick, who happens to have some pipes, dude. Hardwick can sing it. I've seen him karaoke several times. Doesn't change up the song much, but the one he does have down, very good. Maybe we can get him in. Can you play Whole Lotta Love? Could you? Because Hardwick can kick it on Whole Lotta Love. That's not an easy song to play.
Yeah, you know, you have a bunch of reverb behind you. Anybody sounds good on Whole Lotta Love.
But the best part of Whole Lotta Love is that part where it goes, bump, bump,
you know why? Because that's the part of the song where it actually changes. Dude, I'm not a big fan of Ed Zeppelin.
I'm not going to do this with you right now. I'm not going to do it with you because you're a musical fascist.
Fat corporate
rock. You're a fascist.
Rock.
Fat corporate rock.
Fat, oh, lazy, stoner, dumb.
That is not true.
Shittiously contemptuous, moronic.
Hold on. Shut the hole for a second. And let me ask you a question. Corporate rock. The Beatles.
Pretentious.
Led Zeppelin's pretentious?
Absolutely.
What are you out of your nut?
Pretentious and arrogant. Does anybody remember Laughter? What the hell is that about?
What the hell is that about?
What is that?
The song remains
the same. Have you seen that thing?
I sure have.
That's like sitting through an execution. It's just painful.
You're a musical fascist.
But you have to watch.
You have nothing but contempt for blues-based rock and roll. They evolved. No, that's true. I think you're a racist.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's play that clip.
Play what clip?
I don't know.
I understand what you're saying about Led Zeppelin, but I think you should re-listen to it. Those guys invented
hard
rock.
I lived through that every day in high school. It was hell.
Okay, so you're a little older than me.
Journey and Toto and...
All right, well, there. How about those bands?
Sticks.
I think we can agree on that.
Foreigner.
I think we can agree on that.
All in the same corporate rock horse crap.
No! Led Zeppelin has nothing to do with those bands. You cannot compare Led Zeppelin and Toto and sit on a show across from me. Toto and Led Zeppelin?
Dinosaur.
Journey and Led Zeppelin? I don't care if they're dinosaurs, but what the hell are you talking about? You can't compare Journey and Led Zeppelin. What the hell is that? What's wrong with you?
They elicit the same kind of response out of me, gag response.
No, dude, you just crossed a line.
Man, no sense of humor. That band has no sense of humor.
Who cares?
Led Zeppelin?
Who cares?
Because it makes them more human.
Is that their job?
Standable.
Dude, how can they not be human? Jimmy Page bought Aleister Crowley's house thinking he can make the Loch Ness Monster come up. How can that be? What's more human than something that's retarded?
That's retardedly
of course it
stupid
is.
And arrogant. Yeah.
Okay.
But when you have no sense of humor, it really comes through in
my
your
friend,
music.
Listen to me.
It
listen
really
to me.
Does. You take yourself too seriously. You end up being just pretentious.
I understand. Robert Plant, as a personality, very arrogant and very... That's his bit.
And that guy's bloated. That guy... What, it's
who
like
cares?
One of those expandable sponges that Letterman used to hang out.
He's bloated now? You mean he's an old guy and he's gotten fat?
No, he was bloated like 20 years ago.
Jim, who are you talking about? Robert Plant?
Robert Plant?
And what are you talking about?
I don't want to stare up at his tight crotch area for an hour and a half and song remains the same.
What the hell is bloated?
That's hell. Bloated, fat.
He's not. You're thinking of the wrong guy, and now you're. I don't know. I think you have mental problems. If anything, Robert Plant. Has anyone ever seen Robert Plant bloated?
And John Bonham. What is this with an hour
and
a half?
John Bonham. Just because your band, the one band that you like, the Beatles, who happen to be really, honestly, outside of John Lennon, I love the Beatles, okay? But in terms of classists and in terms of musical snobs, in terms of what they were trying to do.
Musical snobs?
Yeah,
snobs?
Sure.
They were the most eclectic band on earth. That's why their music, that's why every one of their albums had virtually like four hits on it, because they changed their styles every album, and they knew how to do it because they were influenced by virtually every form of music, and that's not being a snob. That's being
so. This is
They're open-minded.
They're open. Open-minded.
Yeah.
So they're smart. The Beatles, and they are the best band in the world, right,
Jim? I would say that in my book they're pretty much.
And what about your open mind, Jim? What about that? What about where is that part of you? Does that exist, Mister? I can't see anything past the Beatles.
It does exist in this clip.
Oh, see, no, I'm not going to let you off that easy. Why don't you play one of your? See, now I'm not going to be put in the position to act like I don't like the Beatles. So I love the Beatles. And I love John Lennon.
Yeah.
And I love I love all that stuff. But I have to tell you honestly, Led Zeppelin. There's nothing else I can say other than they rock. Jimmy Page is not a he's a great guitar player. He's a unique guitar player.
He's a great player in the Yardbirds. Yeah.
Oh, you're ridiculous. You're ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
What are you some sort of retro freak?
You saying you hate the Yardbirds?
There's nothing wrong with the Yardbirds.
I'm talking about blues-based bands. Let's go back to the real blues-based bands.
What kind of person? What kind of pompous, arrogant, pseudo-intellectual perfect.
Well, you're talking about blues.
No.
Why don't you talk about the real blues that doesn't have 20-minute drum solos for God's sake?
Oh, the Yardbirds is real blues? See, here's your problem. You're a racist. Now, listen to me. here's what I'm going to say to you. Let me just explain what
I'm a racist? What the hell? Where the hell did that come from?
Well, how could you say the Yardbirds are real blues? That's like dismissing everything they came from.
They had real blues-based songs.
All right.
I'm not saying they're totally blues.
I'm sorry.
At all.
Here's what I'm going to say to you. I'm just going to point out what you just did.
What?
Okay? You dismissed the entire the entire Led Zeppelin songbook, and you said that the only time Jimmy Page was good was during the Yardbirds. That is so revisionist, and it's fascistic, and it's inability to really assess musical history.
Am I putting people in camps right now? This got nothing to do with fascism. It just has to do with my taste, and I believe, like, you know, I can listen to Led Zeppelin to about four other songs. I think they may have maybe a good quarter album out of the 38 they produced in 3 years or whatever the hell it was.
You should just maybe.
But I just don't think they didn't change at all. They got nothing.
I'm very open minded. Musically and otherwise, to the point of fault, I think. I think there's a real difference between me and you, is that my liberal nature sort of goes across the board, and I'm willing to entertain a lot more different things than you. And if you want to close the door, if you want to close the door on Zeppelin 1, 2, and 3, Physical Graffiti, if you can actually close the door of your mind to Physical Graffiti, I don't know that we have anything to talk about at all anymore, and maybe you should just... Am I wrong? Hardwick? No, I'm not, right? It's crazy. It's crazy.
Comparing them to Toto? I have an open mind. Open mind. It's just when, you know, I have an open mind to listen to things, and then you know, I make a decision on whether or not I really like it. And that's what people basically do.
Okay, well, then let me tell you something. I truly like Led Zeppelin. I appreciate their innovation. I understand your criticisms of their arrogance, but I think that was the posture that they took. That was who they presented themselves as. What do you think of the Stones?
Stones, I think, you know, their last good output was probably in 78, you know? I don't think they've
done
it.
With Some Girls, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll agree with you there. Just as long as okay, that's fine. We can live with that. I can go with you on that. Wow, man. So you know, Rumsfeld's in trouble. Thank God.
He was a big fan of Toto.
Who the hell was Toto and Journey? Oh,
No. I'm not talking about stylistically they're the same. I'm talking about in just, you know, gag reflex.
I think we've worn it out. I think we understand each other, and I understand your criticisms, but.
Man, they dominated the radio, too. It was just, like, horrible
in
the late
70s. Why the hell is that their fault?
You know who the hell is that? It's Danny Goldberg's fault.
All right. You can blame him for anything you want. You know, you can blame him for me talking to you right now alone in a room. All right.
Alone in the room, but there are millions of people listening.
So are we going to do this? It looks like Donald Rumsfeld is going to need an armored vehicle to protect himself from the flak from his own military. This guy is getting what he deserves. There's about 6 or 7 generals criticizing his handling of the war that shouldn't have been fought in the first place. I hope he saved a good Humvee for himself and maybe one of those flak jackets that he didn't send to the troops, because he's going to need it. And now, Bush is, of course, going to support him because Bush can't afford to lose anybody, but they should all be fired. Stephen Cambone, the undersecretary over there at the Defense Intelligence Agency, he should be fired. They should all be fired, and they should be held as war criminals. Oh, my God, I'm channeling Malloy. The Bush crime family, truth seekers, is, I think it's very telling, given that you had General Shinseki initially saying that we needed 300,000 people to go to this war that we shouldn't have been fighting in the first place, and now finally it's taken this long. I'll tell you, there's a quake happening. These guys are starting to, this entire administration, anything that's connected to it, is starting to crumble, and I couldn't be more excited. But when you have this high-level brass, this high-level military brass, Marine Corps General Anthony Zinni's been on Rumsfeld's ass for weeks, if not years now, retired Major General Charles Zwanek, and he's a guy who was in Iraq, just believes that he's literally said that he thinks that Rumsfeld is carrying too much baggage with him, and I think it must be like the bags of bodies of about 3,000 American soldiers. I mean, come on already. Now, I don't know what's going to change here, and I don't know whether this is going to mean anything that these guys are coming out, but it certainly is something for the military themselves, for them to start having their own points of view, which you're trained not to have. But just the fact that there are guys coming out of West Point now that are looking to get out of the military before they even get started, shows that the people on the ground, the grunts on the ground, the guys who are actually fighting the war, are now finding some support for their disdain for the way this Pentagon has managed them. And this is a guy, Rumsfeld, who never really cared about the soldiers. He never really cared about the guys on the ground. I would go as far to say that the president didn't really care either. These guys run the government as if it's a corporation. The bottom line is all they care about. These guys, they didn't put enough of them down there. They didn't equip them properly. They didn't protect them properly. And when they come back, they're looking to drain them even more. The health coverage that these guys get is supposed to go up. I mean, these people are, I believe Malloy, not only they are war criminals, but what's even sadder is that they can't even pretend that they care about the troops on the ground. And now, finally, some of the brass is starting to speak up for those guys. So hopefully we'll be back. We'll have Ian Gillan from Deep Purple here in a little while. You want to play it one more time? Come on. We don't have much time now. Well, it doesn't matter. You can do Sammy the Stem Cell, too?
Yeah, Sammy's going to be here.
Do you even know the words Smoke on the Water? I don't know any of them.
Smoke on the water. There's smoke on the water. Hey, there's smoke on the water.
All right. Well, play that exact thing for him when he comes. All right? We'll be back in a second as soon as I hear music in my head. But hey, there it is. Cool. All right. Hang out, will you?
Yeah, I'll be here.
All right.
And now, ooh, it makes me wonder. Mark Maron.
Don't it make you wonder? Don't it make it... I'm going to say it. It's just not about the lyrics. I can barely ever remember lyrics, okay? I really can't remember lyrics that well. There are certain Led Zeppelin songs. I like the band. I think they're a great band. They were innovative. They may have been arrogant, whatever you want to say, but there's nothing more arrogant than saying Jimmy Page's best work was with the Yardbirds. That, to me, is the pinnacle of arrogance.
I thought he was down to his roots in the Yardbirds and just kind of trailed off into a big noodle fest.
No, he didn't. It wasn't
10 years of noodling.
The Grateful Dead is noodling, and I listen to the Dead on the way over here because I have a soft spot in my heart for Jerry Garcia. Sometimes I'm not a big Dead fan, but it makes me wish that I could just be in a field dancing with a girl that smells like patchouli.
With your arms above your head?
Yeah, well, maybe a little of that. Maybe not so much. I'm more of a jiggy kind of thing. I was more of a hippie jigger than a hands over the head kind of guy. Okay? So back off. Now to help us sort out some of the latest developments and issues surrounding stem cell research, please welcome a very controversial guest, Sammy the Stem Cell. Welcome, Sammy.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. I'm a complete integrated human person built for a sesso, so you can all just...
All right. Look, Sammy, you must have read this story out of Ireland about this man with MS who has been suffering intense, debilitating pain for over 10 years. He just received stem cell treatment and is now pain-free for the first time in a decade. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'll tell you how I feel. I'm sick and tired of the Irish coming over the border and stealing good railroad jobs from the Chinamen. It's about time we stuck it to those fat-faced potato eaters. Maybe he's pain-free because he's just missed the telephone for the first time in 10 years.
All right, what about the mumps? Right now, there's an epidemic of mumps in Iowa and Illinois. Doesn't it matter to you that stem cell research might someday find a cure for the mumps?
Well, if I may quote from our founding father, George Washington, you're not a real American until your testicles swell to excruciatingly painful proportions.
George Washington never said that.
Yes, he did. Why do you think he was standing up in that boat?
All right, wait. Don't you care that you have the potential to cure diseases, to stop human suffering?
Hey, the only thing I care about is where my next heart is coming from.
Oh, you're disgusting.
Yeah, and you're welcome. Hey, you know what? I think you forgot some.
Yeah, well, what's that?
I'm sacred life, hole. Oh, and this too!
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm mooning ya. Got my trousers down, my ass pointed towards your face to show my contempt. That's mooning.
Now, wait. Now, I remember why this is why I don't have you on anymore. It's because I hate you. I hate you, Sammy. I hate you. I hate you so much.
Oh, Mark. What have I done? I'm truly and sincerely sorry about that. If I may get serious here for a moment, we've had our differences. Excuse me, you and I, but over the years I've come to appreciate you as a human being, and I actually feel I've opened my mind to new ways of thinking because of you, and become more introspective, and in that process, more tolerant of other people's beliefs and feelings. I just want to say, Mark Maron, I do not hate you, because I do not have time for hate.
Wow, Sammy. Thanks a lot, man. That kind of leaves a lump in my throat.
Because I'm too busy doing your wife, you plute-headed sauce monkey.
Whoa, plute-headed sauce monkey. What did you say about my wife?
Ouch!
You know what? You should be killed.
Stop.
You should be killed.
Stop hurting me. Leave me alone. You want to kill me? You want to kill me? You can't f***ing kill me. I can't kill me.
All right, dude, you're scaring me, man. Why don't you just leave? Could we just do that?
When you f*** off. Why don't you just go choke on a kiwi, you boy, curly-haired sad sack?
Hey, f*** you, you f*** tall.
Yeah, right back at you, f*** nose. And the horse you rode in on. Suck.
All right, get out.
Go f***.
Oh,
me.
You're disgusting.
Yeah, you and your mom.
I've had it.
And the horse you rode in on.
Can we have someone remove him, please?
And the army.
All right.
And all those other people.
You know, you're scaring our guest who just walked in. Has no idea what's going on. Has no idea Ian Gillan just walked in and said, what the hell is this? It's a children's show, Ian. So our Ian Gillan is here from Deep Purple, and you're going to play guitar for him, right? I'm sure he's looking forward to that.
You don't set me up for something like that. You know, four chords.
That's all it takes, man. All it takes is three chords to rock. Am I right? All right, see? I got validation. Yeah, I wonder if he shares your opinions on Led Zeppelin.
Probably not.
No, he might. I mean, I bet you they were competitors. There were probably wars between Zeppelin and Purple. Yeah? I wonder. I think he probably, I bet you if it weren't for Ian Gillan, that Robert Plant probably wouldn't have had the same chops that he did. That's what I'm thinking.
Really? You think so?
I bet you I'm going to talk to him about that. I bet you there were some, I don't want to tip it. I'll talk to him when he gets in here.
What about Tommy Rowe? Nobody ever talks about Tommy Rowe.
Who the hell's that?
Sweet Pea, probably the most influential. Okay, I'm screwing around here, but you know, Tommy Rowe. Where are we? What's happening?
We're about to ease into a transition, my friend. We're going to talk to Ian Gillan in just a second. We're going to have Chris Hardwick out here in a little while. I wish I'd get Chris in here to sing. That would be something.
Why don't you get everybody here to sing? You know, we are the world.
Wait, can you think we can?
No.
All right. So, look, folks, as I said, I think that's all the politics we're going to do for the evening. I got that feeling that it's casual Friday. I got that feeling that it's over. Can't we just say we won already? Can't we just call it quits and say, all right, everything's good now. They're all about to go down. Can't we just say that? And now Bill Kollar's pointing at me. I'll tell you, man. Oh, boy. What are you going to do this weekend? You coming over on Sunday?
Yeah, that was the plan. I'm coming over on Sunday.
Is it okay with Heather?
Sure.
All right, good. So we'll have some veggie burgers. I've got to put some big hippie banquet together for all you granola types.
Yeah, put some Beatles on, too, will you?
No, I'm not going to do that. No, it's going to be all Deep Purple, some Zeppelin.
Who else do
you
hate?
Who else?
Zeppelin, you know, I don't want that. You know,
Why don't we bring your Toto records?
I don't...
You must. It seems to me that you hate them so much you must have them. Yes. We bring a Styx record, could you?
Traumatized high school for me. That's all I got to say.
I miss that. Foreigner was being played to death when I was in high school. Ian Gillan's going to be in here in a second. Hang out, folks.
Live from Burbank, California, the self-medication capital of the world, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's building his own private rocket. Mark Maron.
You've already done that one. You know, there's going to be some kooky blogster. It's going to be like, Jim's repeating his intros. How are you, geniuses? Philosopher, kings and queens. We're shifting up here. We got rid of the swing to put some Deep Purple in honor of our guest. Ian Gillan was and is... an original member of the band Deep Purple. He is one of the standard bearers for heavy metal vocalists. He was there for all of it. Machine Head, Made in Japan, Who Do We Think We Are, songs like Smoke on the Water, Hush, Lazy, Space Truckin'. He's here with us today. Welcome to the show, Ian Gillan.
Cheers. Nice to be here. Thanks.
Man, I tell you, we're having this big conversation about rock and roll and about, now, Deep Purple, like when I was a kid, you guys, like I was in high school, I guess junior high, I remember driving with some kid who was his older brother, just would play Live in Japan, Made in Japan, over and over and over again. So it's plowed into my head. When did you guys actually start out and what was going on in the scene when you were starting out?
You mean in music
or in Deep Purple? Yeah.
Well, Roger Glover and I joined Deep Purple. They'd already made three albums, The Hush, The Kentucky Woman, all that sort of thing. They were kind of they were looking to change into a hard rock band. Roger and I were already We joined as a singer and a bass player and as a songwriting team.
You were like a team, yeah.
And we just looked at each other in the first rehearsal and said, this is it.
This is pretty good.
This is what we've been dreaming of all our lives. And the chemistry was there. You know, you go in a party on your own, and it takes a while to get to know everyone. But in fact, we joined two of us together. It was a kind of two sections going together, so it really worked.
So you had a force. You weren't just
yes.
one guy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it was awesome. It was just amazing.
And the original band is touring right now? This is all the same guys?
No. Richie left in 13 years ago. We've had Steve Morse with us for 12 years.
Steve Morse is a great guitar player.
Steve Morse, Dixie Drakes. I mean, he's been with us for 10 years now, and just amazing. Yeah, Ian Pace is still playing drums. Roger's on bass. John Lord retired about 5 years ago. We have Don Airy with us, and
What's up with Richie Blackmore? Is he a little weird? Did you guys have a fight or something?
I used to room with Richie when we were kids. He was fine. He just what can I say? What's a euphemism for megalomania? I mean,
that's what we were just talking about. With when you guys started out, what were the other metal bands? Or they weren't even. They were sort of like hard rock. What you guys were doing was just being invented, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it was jamming, always jamming. But we would write songs in 10 minutes, and sometimes just jam for 6 hours. We still do. I remember Speed King was the first thing we were rehearsing, and it was on Deep Purple Rock, and that was it. And I just started singing. I'd never jammed before like that, so I just started singing every Little Richard and Elvis lick that I'd ever known.
Right.
And stole everything and put it together there. Highway Star was written on a bus on the way to a show. One of those investigative journalists said, how do you write songs? And Richie went like this, ding 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 ding. I mean, he was being satirical, but
the
guy didn't get it.
Now,
so we wrote the song and did it on stage that night.
Now, what in terms of how long are you going to be on the road now?
We're 8 weeks into a 2-year tour.
Unbelievable.
Currently, and I'm meeting up with the guys in Australia on Wednesday.
You're just going to fly down to Australia and then you start the whole world tour there?
No, we've already done 8 weeks. We've already done Germany, France, Poland, Spain, Italy.
How was the response?
Unbelievable. 10,000-12,000 kids a night, and they're all 18 years old.
That's amazing. So it sort of comes full circle, I guess.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's
fascinating to see people playing instruments.
Now, when you were starting out, like what year, like when Deep Purple first started? What was that, 1971, 72? Then when you started,
was it the Court of King Arthur?
Yeah,
I think around. It was about 400 years ago. Yeah, something like that.
Now, I always wonder, and what I was thinking about before, was there a competitive element to rock and roll at the time? Because when I read about like The Who, or if I read about some guys who say they were constantly trying to outdo the other band, did you guys have that? And which bands were around then?
To be honest, it was never like that. We were like a music community, and
really,
We used to go in the same bars. I mean, we're always on the road.
Yeah,
we were always performing musicians, so you don't bump into each other except at festivals and. Parties and stuff
and
like that.
And then it's usually say, still alive, good for you.
It was like that. And it was just, no, I mean, I think all that competitiveness was created by someone else other than us. We all thought the world of Zeppelin. I mean, Ian Pace used to be going on about John Bonham's drum sound all the time, you know. And I'd be listening, when I heard Whole Lot of Love the first time, I was going, oh, man, that's great. Listen to that boy sing, you know, it's great.
You hear that? This is one of the giants of rock and roll, mm-hmm. validating my argument in the sense that Led Zeppelin was great.
It was freedom, you know. We came from blues. You said something earlier when I just came in, and you were talking about learn three chords and you're there. Well, it's true, an E, A, and a B seventh, and tell a story about how your woman done you wrong, and you're away.
Yeah, you're going.
Life. Yeah, and all you need. My first band, there was like six acoustic guitar players and about three drummers. We took every biscuit tin and knitting needles and whatever you could make a thundering racket. You mentioned Tommy Rowe earlier on.
Yes.
Sweet Little Sheila, right?
Yeah.
That was the first song I practiced.
Really?
Ever. In
How
my
do you
first
like that?
Band.
What did you guys think of the Beatles?
Heroes. Absolute heroes. You took a different take on the Beatles over here.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, I think probably the first big impact was A Hard Day's Night.
Right.
The movie. And so consequently, everyone saw the Beatles here in a different way to the way we saw them. They changed everything for us because they were the first beat group, as they were called then, to actually start writing their own material. I mean, the first album was unbelievable. I mean, they didn't write all the songs then, but they just come from Germany. They were hard-nosed musicians, you know.
And you remember when all that was happening in England?
Sure. Well, I was in a beat group as well. You know, we were all working out, touring around, working clubs in Germany.
So most people
five shows a night, eight on Saturday and Sunday.
Most people did cover then. They did
cover
songs?
Yeah, we had a repertoire of about 200 or 300 songs, and we tailored our show according to the audience.
Really?
Absolutely. We used to do... We were a six-piece harmony band.
Yeah.
It was a rock band. So we used to do surf music for the Australians in the clubs in London. And we used to do... then we did the entire Elektra catalogue for all the German fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, and classic rock and roll standards.
Now, when you first met, like, I guess I'm sort of fascinated in some respects with the sound Blackmore had in the Purple that you guys started. Because he sort of was the first guy to innovate with the guitar, electric guitar, in terms of hard rock with a sort of classical foundation. Isn't that true?
Yeah, it is. I mean, everyone had their different thing. Purple was a wonderful blend because we didn't all come from the same background.
Yeah.
You had John Lord with his classical background and jazz, Jimmy Smith style. Ian Paice came from the Buddy Rich School of Music, you know, big band swing.
Yeah.
Roger Glover was the stinking hippie. All the folk stuff. And Richie was the... was a session player on the first independent studios in the UK, so tremendous technique, great sound, and he'd worked with Screaming Lord Sutch and all those other bands, so he had a great stage presence. And he was different. He didn't come in the blues route. He came in through, the classical, sort of thing.
And then a lot
Whereas Clapton and Beck and all those things came in for a different way.
You know? And it seems like some of the metal bands now are doing more what Blackmore did and what you guys did than what some of the blues bands do. Because you talk to people who, like my wife's a huge Megadeth fan and a huge Metallica fan, and they don't do any blues-based stuff at all.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it was to do with technique and histrionics, you know, mm-hmm. basically, because that stuff looks great on stage, and if you're young and immortal, then, you know, you can do that, and you can swing your guitar around your neck, and you can look great, and it's perhaps a little more challenging than getting a good feel for blues, and you...
That's for sure.
You have a lot of energy at that age. So.
I feel bad sometimes because, like, I'm a huge blues fan, and if I play guitar, I generally play blues. But it's like you said, it's very hard to make the blues. May be simple, but it's hard to do it with authenticity.
Absolutely,
because anybody can play it. It's every bar band in the world can play blues. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in a way, it's a shame because I mean, B.B. King just did his last show at the Albert Hall in London, or Wembley, I should say, massive audience.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like a cabaret show now.
Oh, really?
It's schmaltzy, and, you know, it's...
Well, he's like 107, isn't he?
Yes, coming up. Just a lad.
Yeah, it's weird. I tend to play it, but I don't listen to it as much as I used to.
Well, he's a fabulous guitar player.
Yeah.
But it was Eric Clapton that copped the blues, first of all, and learned about finger vibrato and all those sort of techniques that the guys in Chicago used to play.
Right, and Peter Green, too, was there at the beginning.
Yeah.
He's not what he used to be.
No,
what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
One sandwich short of a picnic, that kind of.
Yeah, I think so. who were some of the guys you used to hang out with, like, over the years? Did you ever have, like, what are some of your most memorable events that happened in your rock and roll career?
Oh.
Like the biggest concert, the most exciting
biggest concert was actually last year.
Oh, yeah?
In Brittany, in France, we had 180,000 18-year-olds there. It was incredible, just incredible. We played at very young people now in most of the world.
That's amazing.
That was the biggest show I ever played.
Yeah.
Some highlights, doing Jesus Christ Superstar. Joining Deep Purple was the highlight of my life.
Right.
It was the greatest thing
changed
that ever happened.
Changed everything, huh?
Yeah.
That's right, you were on the original recording of Jesus Christ
I was
Superstar.
The original Jesus Christ young man, yes.
And I had that record.
And singing with Pavarotti a couple of times. I duetted with him in a couple of benefit shows in Italy. Sang Nessun Dorma with him.
Really?
Yeah. And the longest party I ever had, I sang with Black Sabbath for a year. I went out for a drink with Ozzy and with Geezer and Tony.
Yeah.
And we met in a pub called The Bear in Woodstock, halfway between where we lived. And I got completely blitzed and mullered. I got a phone call from my office the next day. Phil wants to speak to you. Okay, what's up, Phil? I got a headache. He said, look, if you're going to make career moves, I think you should at least call me first and we should talk about it. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, apparently yesterday you got drunk as a skunk and joined Black Sabbath.
And that was when Ozzy was out?
Yeah, that's after Ronnie James Dio was out. I mean, Ozzy's the singer with Sabbath, there's no doubt
about
it. But they were at a loose end and so was I, so we had a year.
All right, so we'll talk about that new record you got coming out in just a second. Our guest is Ian Gillan from Deep Purple. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now, down by the river, he shot his baby. Mark Maron.
Neil Young apparently has, speaking of him, Jim Earl.
Yeah?
What do you mean? Speaking of Neil Young, our guest here is Ian Gillan, but I just heard, read today somewhere that Neil Young is releasing a Impeach Bush song.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah,
oh,
with a choir, apparently. Mm. Which I don't know if it's true, and neither did the thing I read, but why should that stop me from talking about it? Does everything have to be true? I'm not making it up.
That sounds amazing. Reasonable.
I was imagining the other day a little committee of the people on the other side in the war in Iraq sitting around saying, you know, we've got to improve our PR. We've got to find some other way of saying an expression that describes murdering innocent people. And they're scratching their heads. And one guy says, well, what about collateral damage? And they go, no, it's already been taken by the other side.
Right, right. So our guest is Ian Gillan. And I'm sitting here looking at the new CD. And I wish to hell my wife, Mishan, was here because she's such a metalhead. And some of these guys, this is almost like the metal version of the duet series, you know, like with Frank Sinatra. Who are the guys that play on this? You're doing all Deep Purple songs.
No.
Not all?
No, there's only a couple of Deep Purple songs there.
There's Smoke on the Water.
Smoke on the Water, When a Blind Man Cries, Demon's Eye, and Speaking. Out of 16 songs, yeah.
Okay, and the rest are just...
Well, there's Trash from the time I was with Black Sabbath, with Tony Iommi playing with Ian Paice and Roger Glover, so it's kind of Black Purple version.
Okay.
I got Joe Satriani on it. He was with Purple for a year. They're all good friends. Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. I'd be doing a Bob Dylan song.
Satriani played with you guys too?
Yeah. He was with us when Richie walked out in the middle of a tour. And that was the end of the band, we thought. But Satch saved our lives, really. And we carried on, finished the tour. And the sun came out, and we haven't looked back since.
God, there's a whole world of music that I listened to Deep Purple when I was a kid. And I listened to some more metal-y stuff. But it was like I was more of a blues head. And my wife is just like a metal freak. And you've got who else is playing on here with you?
Well, there's Jeff Healy's playing with John Lord on When a Blind Man Cries, very appropriate. Joe Elliott, as I said, from Def Leppard.
Yeah.
Bully John Roth, he used to be with the Scorpions.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of people. There's a cast of thousands. And no one was allowed to leave the studio until they each had 3 hours to come in and do their bits on the live bed tracks. And no one was allowed to leave until they did one pass at Smoke on the Water. So we've got a cast of thousands on that.
Who did the best version?
It's hard to tell. It's like the Rock Olympics, you know. But I think that we've got Steve Morse doing the solo on the CD side, but on the DVD, you can select from four different soloists out of all that lot. But the greatest moment of all was another guy called Steve Morris, an old friend of mine. He was a bit nervous just before. He'd done his three tracks and said, okay, you've got to do Smoke now. And it's a big deal. And so
for them to back you
up. I said,
would
you like a beer? He said, oh, yeah. And he cut his finger just before his big moment. And he cut his second finger on his left hand, and it was pouring with blood. And he said, look, I'm bleeding for you. And he played this solo, and the blood was dripping off the neck of his guitar. Played a brilliant solo. Blood everywhere. Afterwards, we cleaned it up and went for a beer.
Yeah.
And I called everyone a couple of weeks after the sessions to say thanks for coming up and twiddling and warbling on the record.
Yeah.
And I said, did you manage to get the blood off your guitar, Steve? He said, get it off. He said, I put three coats of clear varnish on it. That blood's there forever.
Oh, man. Rock and roll mythology.
Yeah.
As it's being made. You just were telling a story on the break there. I know Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols hosts a show, another show, an interview show. And you guys used to be on the same label. Is that what you're telling me?
On Virgin, yeah. In the early days. They were just fading out, and we were just fading in with the Gillan band at that time. And I was talking to Richard Branson and Simon Draper, the MD. And I saw them raise, and they went, oh, God, here he comes again. And John Lydon, or Mr. Rotten, as he's known, walked through the door, slammed the door open, came across, hoiked up and spat on the desk, and turned around and walked out again. And they just put a piece of paper over it to do with it. And we carried on as if nothing had happened.
Yeah.
And apparently he did that sort of on a regular basis, just came in and gobbed on the table.
That's Johnny. Huh?
It's hilarious.
I heard Jones interview Lydon. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
because you forget. I imagine it's the same with you, that whatever place you people hold in our minds as fans, you guys you've just known each other for a million years. Like, you know all these guys for years.
That's right.
And you have stories together. And after a certain point, I imagine that most of the bad blood, if there was any, sort of dissipates.
It generally does, unless it goes too far. In some cases it does, but it's very rare.
Yeah. And now, who are some of the guys you like now in terms of, you listen to new bands? Do you see any guys that are, like, doing you? Do you ever get flattered or pissed off when you see somebody?
Well, for many years, of course, a lot of bands did copy or be inspired by or whatever. The same as we had formative years, we copied our heroes. And so Zeppelin, Purple, Sabbath were the root stock for a lot of bands for many years. But recently I'm hearing some stuff that I really like, because during that, you talked about the Beatles earlier on.
Yeah.
During that time in the 60s, Carnaby Street time in the UK, it was so exciting, and the quality of the pop music was incredible. And I'm listening to Kaiser Chiefs, for example.
Yeah.
I Predict a Riot and stuff like that. And I'm hearing them cut straight back through before Zeppelin, Purple, and I'm hearing influences from bands like Amen Corner, Small Faces, The Kinks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jam and stuff like that.
That stuff is coming back around.
It's great. Well, everyone looks for... They want something different.
Yeah. And the Kinks were really interesting band.
Kinks. I used to play football with Ray and Dave.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They still do stuff, don't they?
I go early whenever we're doing a festival together. They were on at 5 o'clock, and I went early there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And nothing's changed.
That's cool.
Dave opened the door. Ray was sitting there at his portable little mirror dressing table, putting on his makeup, glass of brandy, cigar. Ian, dear boy, how are you?
Professionals. Ian Gillan was our guest. The new album is Gillan's In. Of course, there's all the Deep Purple stuff. They're on tour around the world for the next 2 years. So catch it. Thanks a lot for coming down.
That's
Ian Gillan.
Brilliant. Thank you.
And now, flubly flubberly flubberty fidoob, Mark Maron.
That's coming out of your check.
Hargly, hargly, snargly, snarg.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot. You know, I couldn't even pretend, like, I know 4 or 5 Deep Purple songs, but I can't. It's not really my music, but I thought that guy was pretty cool.
He was great. Yeah.
Right now, I don't want to embarrass this guy, but I think I already did, probably. But not only is he a funny guy, he can sing. Swear to God, every karaoke party I go to, he's up there doing a whole lot of love, which is not easy, as I said. He can bowl. Dad's a professional bowler. And he's funny. And he's in a musical comedy act now. He's a very, what do you call it, a renaissance man. Chris Hardwick, how are you?
I'm good. But you're right. I mean, you know, you go to the karaoke bars and you have like 2 or 3 songs you do every time. It's pretty sad.
I am petrified, man. I've never gotten up and done karaoke. I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. Like, I want to. I think it would be good for me. It would be like, it would be, it would help me cross some. I'm horrified of it. I'm horrified of embarrassing myself. And if you bring that much fear with you on stage, people will know it.
You know what's funny is, like, especially like in a karaoke environment, just for like being around comics and comedy all the time, you realize that, you know, just like you were saying with the musicians, there are circles of musicians, and within that circle there are little circles. And the same thing, if you go to different karaoke bars, you see who the regulars are. You find out that there's hacky stuff that they do. Like, oh, you shouldn't sing Neil Diamond. That's totally hacky. You know?
Really?
Yeah, there's totally the same structures that apply to comedy apply to, like, karaoke.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that there was such a profound and large karaoke subculture.
There is. If a white guy does Baby Got Back trying to be funny, that's very hacky. It's not funny at all.
Here, all you karaoke fans, take notes here. Hey, can I tell people, if you don't quite know who Chris Hardwick is, I got to do it.
No, that's fine.
Singled Out from MTV was, that was your big break, right?
That's right.
Was it Jenny McCarthy?
That led to hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds of dollars! He now drives an old BMW. Old VW. What do you drive? You drive a nice car?
It's a nice car.
That's cool. So, you are doing a lot more comedy now. And what is hard? Tell me what exactly, how Hard and Firm came to be. Because I got the website up, and I think you guys are funny, and you and that little musical genius guy. What's his name?
Mike Furman.
Yeah. You do, would you call it comedy music?
No, and I think mistakenly there's a slight difference between comics who are doing music and then musicians who do comedy, and I think we would rather be the latter because, like, comics who are musicians generally, although lately there have been a surge of really great musical comedy acts, but before I think the idea was, you're singing jokey parody songs about,
yeah, I hate
you know,
that. I hate parody songs.
Yeah, so, Tenacious D really did kind of open up the door
right.
to
That's
more...
A different, yep.
And it's like, if you, in and of their, themselves, the songs, you know, if you dissected them, you wouldn't go, oh, there, here's the joke here. It's just, from that point of view, they're hilarious and committed, and it, you know, so.
So you guys are doing, it's all original music.
Yes. And well, except for the one, we did a bluegrass medley of Radiohead songs.
Well, that's, see, that's so good. That's a little twist on things.
Yeah, so we, you know, we did that, but everything else is original.
I once saw Sid Straw, Bill Kohler, our producer, his friend Sid Straw, years ago, do a very sort of laid-back acoustic version of Highway to Hell.
Nice.
I like when people interpret music. I love that about Greg Barron's show. Greg Barron does a show here. I guess it's sort of monthly.
Bring the Rock, yeah.
Bring the Rock, where people will come up and tell a story about a rock and roll encounter or event or an experience with a song, and then have a band sort of do their interpretation.
Yeah,
of the
have
song.
You done it? Have you done?
I've done it a couple times. Yeah,
me too. It's a fun show. But now Greg's so busy with all of his shows.
Greg's about to become the next Oprah.
I think he is.
Is he?
I think he's just going to peel off that spiky hair, and then the Oprah's going to be.
He's just going to be a black woman inside who helps people.
I think Oprah laid an egg in his brain, and
we did Bring the Rock together. We were in Seattle at Bumper Shoot.
That's right. Oh, that was so much fun.
And you played some sort of toy.
I had played the melodica, probably.
Yeah, melodica.
Yep.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
It's not called a toy.
It's like a toy instrument. It's like an accordion, but you blow into
it. And I think you did get a lot of love.
That's right. I did it then, too.
With the melodica.
That's right.
Oh, dude, you got to mix it up.
I will from now on. Well, I haven't done karaoke in a while, and I did this.
Is that trend over for parties, karaoke?
I don't know. Just after a while, you're like, why am I going back to this? When you find yourself looking at a newspaper that's like, here, the karaoke haps in Burbank, you're like, you know what? I'm in too deep. But I just did a musical, like an 80s rock musical with all those bands that you mentioned, like Styx and Journey. And,
what do you mean you did it with them?
Not with them. It was Kyle Gass was in it. And
from Tenacious D,
and a few other people. And it's the show that these friends of mine put together and that they wanted to, you know, it's sort of like the Queen, like We Will Rock You, but it all like 80s.
Oh, yeah?
So
how'd
like,
that go
like
over?
Metal. It was fun, actually.
Let's be honest here. Now, I'm 42 years old. Jim's like 50.
And 34.
You're 34.
Yeah.
I have to...
I'm not 50.
I'm sorry. How old are you?
I don't know. Why don't you just, you know, go into my bio and take a look. Can you read?
They get old when they're cranky when they're older.
Have you had that education yet?
Youngster? He's 46, I think. 45.
he just bumped you up to the next.
Now I'm going to cop to something because, you know, Toto, Styx, and Journey, when I was in junior high, you were probably in college, when I was in junior high, was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dragged to see Styx once before. And I have to admit that I might have played air guitar to Renegade. I might have. Dun, 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 right?
Styx, funniest VH1 Behind the Music ever.
I didn't watch
Styx
it.
Styx one.
I'm just copping to some stuff.
That was funny. It couldn't have been worse than the Goo Goo Dolls one.
I didn't see that.
Journey?
When that guitar started talking about dressing up like a robot, it was hilarious.
Now, see, that's awesome.
What?
That's an awesome Behind the Music, dressing up like the robot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of anything more humiliating, yet they went on and did it, and it was just the most hilarious thing I've ever seen in my life.
What about Journey? Did you ever like Journey?
I love Journey. Well, I grew up in the South. You know, I grew up in Tennessee, and so bands like Journey and
people used to beat up gay people to Journey in the South.
I think they still do, actually.
Yeah.
But like Paradise Theater was the Styx's album was the first album that I bought with my own money.
Really?
Absolutely.
Mine was the Beatles' second album. So are we friends now?
Mine was you know, like the burp song, the Mad Magazine burp song. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. Did you ever see Journey in concert? What was it like in terms of like? I've gone to some fairly embarrassing concerts in my life.
Oh yeah, me too. I went to when I was in sixth grade. We went to see Culture Club in concert.
Ooh, Culture Club.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that was before. That was before anyone really understood anything about. I mean, like now. The whole concept of, oh, that guy is, you know, he's clearly a gay man, is very culturally infused. But at the time, people were still like, do you think he's gay? When so obviously the only thing he wasn't doing was gnawing on testicles on stage. You know what I mean? I mean, he
was at the show I saw.
he came out in this flowing, gorgeous blue gown and this blue, you know, I mean, like everything was, you know, but we just didn't think about that.
I think that a lot of his purpose in life was to confront people that didn't know why they were into them with their own sexuality. I think
absolutely.
Because I think despite what he intended to do, I think Boy George might have caused some guys to beat up gay guys, but also caused a lot of guys to realize, I love him.
I think the reason that the people were beating up gay guys is because he caused them to realize something.
In themselves, they had to fight.
They had to punch. They couldn't punch inward.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true, man. So now, the other thing that is popular around here is these bowling parties that I go to. And you know what? I can bowl an okay game. But, man, when you showed up with your own ball and don't you have a glove, too? Don't you have the whole thing?
No gloves, but yeah.
Your dad's a professional bowler. What the hell was that like growing up with that?
My dad was...
Who is your dad?
His name is Billy Hardwick, and he was in... I mean, my dad is in the Guinness Book, and, like, he's...
For bowling?
Yeah, yeah. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the... They did a list of the top 20 bowlers of last century, and my dad was in the top 20.
Now, do you get that? Were you traveling in circles when you were a kid? Were like, you Billy's kid?
Yes.
Oh, man. A lot of bowling alleys?
A lot of bowling alleys. My parents met because my mom's dad owned a couple of bowling alleys. My dad retired and bought a bowl. My dad's at a bowling center in Memphis, Tennessee for 20 some years now.
Boy, there's the TV show, Chris.
Don't think I didn't get a call when Ed came on. My dad was like, how come that's not you? And I'm like, because I can't just call a network and go, hey, let's do a bowling show. Put me on it because my dad was a bowler.
You get a lot of roadies, you know?
Yeah, a lot of road puss.
Yeah, man.
With the bowling. A lot of divorcees.
You're buddies with Rob Zombie, too, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on my old show. My wife loves him, too.
He's great. He's just a fantastic guy.
Were you in that last movie? I saw that movie. No, you weren't.
I was in the first one. I wasn't in the most recent one. I wasn't in the sequel.
Now, in terms of stand-up, see, we had this conversation. In front of God and everybody,
yeah.
I'm going to apologize to you on my show.
You're so nice.
For being an ass to you. Because when I was younger, I just had no tolerance for people that came
exactly
into my house.
Doing.
That, like, you know, I knew him as a TV personality. I knew that, you know, he was a television personality. But I'm like, hey, this is for stand-ups. Stand-ups do comedy.
I don't blame you, though, because you didn't know me. And, I mean, you know, just, like, comedy has been my lifelong obsession. But to come from the show that I came from, to come from MTV and to start doing stand-up, and then someone like you who is... You know, like, one of the best comedians working, to see some guy from MTV come into a club and just, like, start telling jokes. I mean, I don't fault you for that at all. I probably would have hated myself.
Wow, that was the nicest thing anyone said on this show.
Yeah, it's true.
If not inaccurate.
You want to try sitting in that seat?
The show wouldn't have as much flair.
Come on, kidding. But, no, that's true, and I was rude, but, you know, you have been building an act, and you have,
Wait, I have to tell you the funniest thing I remember that you ever said to me.
Oh, no.
This was awesome.
It's gonna hurt.
No, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're having a thing, and I'm like, I don't understand, what did I do? And you go, you know what I love about you? You are not derailed by my constant, what was it? It was something like, you're not derailed by my constant, I can't remember what it was specifically now, but it was something about how I constantly attack you, and yet you keep coming back.
Yeah, you keep coming back.
It was awesome.
And that makes us friends forever. It's a perfect codependent relationship.
But you know what's great about you is at the same time, that, like, you'll go, hey, look, I'm attacking you because I'm just insecure. What do you want? You know, like, no one ever disarms themselves while they're swinging an axe at you at the same time. It's so wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It's really gotten me far in life. It's got me a dedicated following of about 7 people who understand why that's good. Like, yeah, how many people you know go, you're an ass. I'm sorry. I have a problem.
Look, I hate myself. You have to... Yeah. Look, we both, you know how similar, you and I are very similar, mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about, we don't have much time, and I was going to say we could talk about God, because you were brought up, because you started talking a little bit about it on stage. I remember you came up to me and asked me about some jokes I was doing and whether they treaded on your stuff, but you started to explore, we'll take it over the break and talk about that in a minute. I really liked your biography on IMDb. Do you know what it says?
No.
Like, you have your big IMDb page here. With all your credits, and then biography for Chris Hardwick. Trivia. Studied philosophy at UCLA.
Wow, there you go.
That's it.
There it is.
We'll be back in a second with a little more Chris and some short order news. Stay with us.
Coming up next, Mark Maron's short order news. Remember, do not attempt these jokes at home.
And now, it's Raining Men. Mark Maron.
I got my hands over my head. I'm doing that dance.
Yeah, like you did, you know.
I didn't. No, I didn't.
You used to do that a lot.
I was a hippie jigger. I already brought that up earlier. We're talking with Chris Hardwick, who, it was funny that you came up to me after before it set, and you said, are you doing this? Because Attell does that to me, too, only with certain topics. Attell will come up to me. If he writes any joke, like, he'll come up, are you doing anything about whacking off on a Bible? I'm like, no, I don't. I don't do anything.
You know, we did the same show, and I saw you did all this great evolution creationist stuff.
Right.
And it was a topic that I had for a long time had wanted to write about, and I had that moment where I was like, this is where I'm going to throw my focus. And then I saw you did it, and it was one of those things. It's like, I could do it, but you're already doing it as, you know, that well. Why would I, you know what I mean?
But you were coming from, you were brought up Catholic, and you were looking to start exploring some of that stuff in terms of...
Yeah, I went
to
Catholic high school. All boys.
Mean, you can't, once you, you know, everybody can talk about whatever they want from opinion, but no one can steal your experience, man.
Hey, man, that's good. That's
yeah,
good advice.
I'm going to write that one down, dude. No one can steal my experience because I'm me, man.
No one can take my soul
from
me.
Yeah. I don't know when the hell I started to get concerned about how fit you got, because I know you quit drinking.
Yep.
I remember when you did drink, and you were so much pudgier and sweatier, and you were tired
and
all the time.
And blotchier, and I was tired. Yeah.
And look at you, man. You're like lean. What are you running, like 12 miles a day? Are you becoming an exercise anorexic?
I work out. You know, I'm
honest with you, though. You're compulsive. Because this is the second time I brought this up, and this time I'm bringing it up on the air. I actually said to you last time, like, dude, you got to eat something. You got to stop
running.
You
know, the thing is, before I became a career drinker,
yeah,
I was super, super skinny. And then the booze just put on all this weight, and when I stopped drinking... You know, it all fell away.
See, I
work out like 3 days a week, but I'm not on any diet. I mean, I eat, you know.
Okay, see, again, my envy, my insecurity. It's like, look, I quit drinking, and I still can't eat what I want, you bastard.
Well, I don't eat fried, you know what, I don't eat fried foods that much. I do a couple times a week, but that's it.
So this is funny. See, what you just said, I exercise like 3 times a week. I only eat fried food twice a week. So you are keeping a little bit of an anal catalog.
Well, I keep a little bit of a catalog, but I'm not crazy about it.
You're not a control freak or anything, are you?
Oh, absolutely. You know what I realized?
Yeah.
But I think that's, you know...
What?
For me, like the whole drinking and everything was just about shirking responsibility.
Right.
So.
But now that it's gone, you realize, why can't everything be exactly as I want it to
be? Yeah, man, seriously, don't F with a recovering alcoholic. We have an unnatural aptitude to commitment.
Oh, no kidding, man. And I like to think I'm not, just because there are certain things in my life that are completely chaotic and out of control and nothing I can do about them. But the small little areas on my desk that I can control are very tidy and clean.
Exactly.
Everything's in a neat pile. Well, Hardwick, so what do you got going? You got... you want to plug a gig or anything?
Yeah, well, we have a monthly show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in L.A.
That's Hard and Firm?
Hard and Firm. It's a musical comedy.
I linked people to your website. Can that take them to that website?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
cool.
That's on there.
Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thanks, Mark Maron.
We're going to do some jokes right now.
Do it.
A lot happened in the world today, and we're here at the Mark Maron Show. Don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here now is today's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. Major General John Batista became the 6th. You notice how I'm saying it, because I'm not sure how to say it. I'm going Batista. Like there could be an other, but it might not be.
See, you're fudging.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Okay, maybe I am. But he became the 6th retired general this month to call for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Bush spokesman Scott McClellan said, quote, "The president believes Secretary Rumsfeld is doing a very fine job during a challenging period in our nation's history," end quote. Adding, "This is the rapture, isn't it?" White House insiders say the president has no plans to fire Rumsfeld, and that if Bush punished everybody in his administration who made a mistake, there'd be nobody left to blame the media. I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
U.S. disaster relief officials say many houses that flooded in Hurricane Katrina will have to be raised at least 3 feet to be eligible for flood insurance and rebuilding assistance. They also recommend, in case of another catastrophic flood, that homeowners do more to make their roofs cozy. A town in Germany has postponed its tribute to two Nazi-era aircraft engineers after protests by Jewish groups and local leaders who say two men exploited thousands of forced laborers in their plants. In the wake of these protests, city leaders in Munich say they're having second thoughts about next year's salute to trains. Oh,
trains.
If you can't laugh at the Holocaust, you know, what can you laugh at?
Oh, no, you people are very laughable.
That's what do you mean, you people?
I mean, you laugh a lot at
you
yourself.
You people, what do you mean, you people?
You're peoples. You're, you know.
You on Passover,
the
making
bank,
such jokes,
I'm just
you
saying
are.
The bank people. The
that's
people in the bank. Did I go too far?
That's a short order news. Yeah, that's okay, you die-headed Aryan nation. You're not an Aryan guy. But you want to mock the Jews on Passover, that's your own thing.
Of course, it's a funny thing.
You're going to pay the price, Earl. You're going to pay the price.
I already have.
So Sunday, you're coming over veggie burgers. Bill Kolar's coming over with his brood.
Right. I'll bring some Beatles CDs and Tommy Rowe.
I have them all. I have all the Beatles
albums. No, I'm really bringing Tommy Rowe over in person.
Oh.
Because he's not doing much.
All right. You can bring him over.
He's sleeping over on my couch.
And then Charlie, the guy's booking the show. Crazy Charlie.
He is,
can I call him Crazy Charlie?
Because he is insane.
He's coming over on Sunday, too. Pretty soon, everybody's going to show up there. Hey, you want to come over Sunday? What are you doing, Hardwood?
I gotta get together with my mom at some point because she's...
Nah, hell, bring her. Have some veggie
burger. I'll bring her over.
I'm going to make... Yeah, you got a problem with oats, Kolar? You like oats? You don't like oats.
Hall & Oates?
Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates. There was another band. What do you think of them?
But the hilarious videos.
Andy, man on the board, just gave the big thumbs up to Hall & Oates.
I love Hall & Oates. I'm sorry. I think they're awesome.
Do you?
Absolutely.
What is that guy?
Not ironically, I love them.
Sarah Smile?
Sarah Smile is great.
Oh, they got, okay, you know, some nice melodies. But
they got some kick-ass bass lines. I can't go for that.
We got a bunch of shows next week that with some people on them. Who's going to be on? We've got people like... oh, boy, this is bad. This is the kind of thing you should really prepare for.
Live interview with Don Rumsfeld we have. We got
next
that.
Week, yeah. Don Rumsfeld on the Mark Maron Show.
And
have a good weekend, sheeple. I'll see you Sunday, Jim. I got bronchitis, I think.